Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Perfect Bracket College Basketball Podcast. Haven't had an episode in a while, but I actually have written a few articles on my website, 1in9quintillion.wordpress.com. That's 1in9quintillion, quintillion.wordpress.com. And you can find those. I post those out through my Twitter at one perfect bracket, number one, one perfect bracket is the handle. So anyway, I wrote three articles recently, and I just want to kind of talk about them quick. I thought it would be fun to talk about on the podcast as well, just as kind of a compliment to the articles themselves. So here we go. So the first article I wrote about Tennessee, and I actually had touched on Tennessee in an earlier podcast when I was talking about teams that might have been really motivated, are bringing back a lot of people, and are also probably motivated from the past season to kind of go farther in the tournament than they did before. And if I went into a little bit more in depth to Tennessee here, and I mean, one thing I touched on again is like one of the reasons why it feels like they would be motivated and just be a team you'd expect to do well is that last season they fell in the round of 32, I believe. Yeah, it would have been the round of 32, unless I have a game off. But anyway, they lost to Loyola, and yeah, so it would have been the 11th seed. They were the 3 seed, so they lost to Loyola in a close game at the end. And you know, they're kind of forgotten because Loyola was kind of the team of destiny, the team that got all the attention, and rightfully so, they won. But Tennessee, it was a really close game, and they actually were missing Kyle Alexander, their big man. And like as I watched some highlights from that game, there was, you know, you could tell that he was like a big miss for them. You know, like he provided their main defensive interior presence. And without that, you saw that Loyola was able to kind of get in the paint, even like post up a little bit with their big man, Cameron Crutwig, who played a good game. And, you know, if he hadn't gotten hurt, Tennessee might have won that game. And then very well could have made it to the Final Four because the path kind of cleared out for Loyola. I think they had to beat Kansas State and Nevada, two teams Tennessee definitely would have been favored to beat. Yeah, for sure. So they were a good team last year, 3 seed. Were competitive in the NCAA tournament. Even could have gotten lucky enough to have a Final Four run. And they're bringing a lot of guys back. And actually, I went on to VegasInsider.com and I saw that Tennessee right now is the 11th best odds to win the title, 25-1 behind Duke, Kentucky, Kansas, Villanova, Gonzaga, Nevada, UNC, Virginia, Michigan, and Michigan State. And, you know, I was thinking about whether I felt that was fair or not, or whether, like, Tennessee, should they be, have even better odds than that. And, you know, it's hard to say, because part of me was almost expecting them to be a little underrated, just because they don't have, like, the huge big-name freshman phenoms that they're bringing in. And last year, since they had that kind of fell a little early in the NCAA tournament, I thought that maybe they wouldn't be getting quite as much respect in these like kind of preseason, in the upcoming preseason polls, but from Vegas, as much respect as they would have gotten if they had made that run to the Final Four. But I feel like it does still look like, based on kind of people coming out with their preseason rankings, just sites, and the official preseason polls aren't out yet, it seems like Tennessee is going to kind of be borderline top 10 team, maybe for sure a top 10 team, and that's probably about where they should be. And although, like, I guess as I was going through it, you could make an argument they should be even like a little higher, maybe in that like 5-8 range. And like I said, yeah, like they don't have the freshman phenom that could be contributing to it, along with the fact that, you know, they're in the SEC that, you know, had a better year last year, but hasn't been like a basketball powerhouse. Most of the attention has been going to Kentucky, which again can kind of draw away from Tennessee. Additionally, like for Tennessee, the strength of their team was defense, and last year they were 36th 36th in offense and 6th in defense, according to KenPom, in terms of efficiency. And, you know, I mean, again, like, sometimes, like, offense is kind of more flashy, and that could have contributed to, or could contribute to Tennessee being a little under the radar this year. These are all just, like, factors. But one of the reasons I really like Tennessee is they're returning 87.2% of their minutes from last season, according to Bartervik.com. That's a new website that I've been using that's provides some pretty good college basketball analytics. Yeah, the team has tons of experience. Their top six players include 4 juniors and 2 seniors, which is, you know, pretty rare in college basketball. And these guys are, like, good players that you don't need these guys to take huge leaps, because the team was already really good last year. Of course, continued growth would be great, but it's not completely necessary for this team to be really, really good. And this continuity, like, would prevent this team from dropping off on the defensive end of the floor, although, you know, you got to stay disciplined. So if they're, like, 6th in defense last year, you know, there's no reason that it couldn't even get, for sure, to at least a top 5 level. And so the team is, like, also is well-balanced. You know, as ball handlers, they have Jordan Bone and Lamonte Turner. They have kind of a somewhat, like, 3-man kind of, and Jordan Bowden, who I feel like has, like, a potential to maybe not take a huge leap statistically, but just make a much bigger impact this year, because I feel like he's really talented. I mean, they just have a lot of guys that they'll spread the ball around to, so I don't see him, like, coming out and averaging 17 points per game or something. But they're kind of big-time players. You got Admiral Schofield, Grant Williams, who's kind of really a bruiser inside, and Kyle Alexander, who I mentioned earlier. And as I was going through this team, one thing that really, like, jumped out was, like, they were a defensive strength team, but this team could really shoot the ball last year. Like, Schofield shot 39.5% from 3 last year. Turner shot 39.5% also. Bone shot 38%, and Bowden shot 39.5%. That's not a typo. Those 3 guys that shot 39.5% from 3 last year on, you know, a fine amount of attempts, significant enough to feel like these guys are legit good shooters. Like I mentioned earlier, Kyle Alexander, you know, who is not really as much of an offensive presence, but really played well down the stretch and, you know, was not there in that loss to Loyola. And is really, especially like Grant Williams, you know, I compare him to Bonzi Colson a little bit, just in that they aren't exactly, like, stereotypically great athletes, but they're just really skilled around the basket. They kind of use their body well, are tough, just good, are good scorers inside. In terms of keys for this team, you know, Williams and Schofield, they're the 2 best players, and so they actually obviously are gonna have to step up. Like, are they good enough to be best players on, like, a Final Four team? I think that Tennessee's balanced enough that they can be, but, like, we'll see to what degree Williams and Schofield can carry them. But what I really think will determine this team's ceiling is how good Lamonte Turner and Jordan Bone and Jordan Bowden are going to, how much they're going to improve. Because they weren't the strength of the team last year. And I do feel like to what degree they can take a step forward is going to be really the key. Because I think we know what we're going to get from Williams and Schofield. Of course, they can improve. But those other guys, kind of the guards, is going to be really key for them. And in particular, like, Lamonte Turner last year, he had some games where he had, you know, really high upside. Like, he scored, like, you know, where he scored, like, 20-plus points. So that there was kind of a sign that maybe he's capable of that expanded offensive production. Maybe not every night, but more nights even than last year. So he's one guy I'd for sure keep an eye on. I'm on that backcourt. The team's glaring weakness last season was offensive two-point shooting percentage, where they were 278th in the nation at 47.3%. And it's like the whole team is obviously responsible for this. And but Grant Williams, who, again, had a really good season and took a lot of shots, you know, but he could have been better in this department. You know, he took a lot of two-pointers and made 49.7% of them. And, you know, on its face, like, that might just seem fine. He made, like, half of his shots. But in terms of two-point percentage and in terms of the amount of shots he took and how close they were to the basket, for the most part. You know, he's not shooting like long twos, really, you know, or even that many mid-range jumpers. You really would need him to, he needs to improve that measure. Like, he should be making like low 50%, you know, like 52 to even 55%. Even just like 52% should be a good goal this year. Just like, and you kind of, I kind of was gauging that by looking at other players like Bonzi Colson and like Ethan Happ. Just as a few guys, just that, just to see like what a high quality, you know, post college basketball player, a guy that plays in the post, what he should be shooting from two. Now, he's not going to, like, again, without that certain level of explosiveness, he's not going to be shooting, converting 2-point shots same level as like Marvin Bagley, who, like, you know, can dunk half of his shots, and that's pretty efficient. But you can try to, like, for example, Bonzi Colson, over his last few seasons, he consistently was making twos at like a 54% clip. He's like, and that's pretty good, you know. Again, he was, so if like, if Williams can try to get in that low 50s, I think that would be where he needs to be for Tennessee's offense, not to just like get stuck in that 30s range in terms of KenPom's efficiency rankings, but try to get into the top 20. I think that would be a big key for them. Okay, so that's Tennessee. We're gonna move on to the next article. So for the next article, I was thinking the other day about, you know, because I was seeing Duke and Kentucky, these teams are playing their preseason games, a lot of teams are, they're playing against these Canadian teams, I'm seeing all these highlights, how like Zion Williamson, for example, looks really good, and I was just, you know, my mind was going to, okay, how good are these teams actually going to be this year, along with how good these actual players are going to be in their maybe 1 year of college basketball, and how far do I expect these teams to maybe actually go in the NCAA tournament? You know, it's like way early for that. But my mind was just, you know, going in a few different directions. On the one hand, I was thinking, like, all the hype just is around the NBA. You know, these teams are fun to watch. These, like, freshman phenoms are, like, fun to follow. So I feel like these, you know, these Duke and Kentucky teams, and it feels like Duke in particular this year has got, like, some of the big-time freshmen, along with RJ Barrett, Cameron Reddish. And I'm thinking, okay, so, like, I feel like these teams might be end up being a little overrated just because they get a lot of attention. A lot of the attention is warranted, but a lot of it's based on, you know, these guys have a lot of potential. They're very talented. But, like, we're not giving this – we're not allocating attention necessarily based on percent best chances of winning the NCAA tournament, which, of course, makes sense, but that's where my mind's going. How good are these teams actually going to be? And, you know, like Duke and Kentucky, and again, Kentucky is a little bit more experienced this year. They're bringing back more guys than they were last year, although they still have a large freshman class. So, like, Duke's likely going to start four freshmen. Like I said, Kentucky's a little bit more experienced. They have three sophomores, so three guys returning following their freshman seasons. And they also have a senior, so three sophomores and a senior. Very well might start for them. That's just based on me looking at their roster. I don't know what the talk has been in regards to their starting lineup yet. But again, they also are bringing in six freshmen, so there's going to be plenty of new blood for them as well. Yeah, like I said, on the one hand, I think these teams are too young, and they're just going to fall short when March comes around. They don't have the experience. They just get too much hype. On the other hand, I was thinking, you know, like, there's plenty of teams, like, Kentucky's had some Final Four runs with some really young rosters, and Duke won a national championship recently. So maybe I was thinking, you know, there's, I mean, of course, like, maybe, like, these young teams aren't being overhyped. Like, they're not always going to win the national championship or get to the Final Four. But maybe I should just be appreciating that, like, these teams have a ton of talent. And if things click, like, they really can go well in March, which is obvious. Maybe I should be being a little bit more positive with regards to what I think about their postseason chances. Even at this point now. But I wanted to dig a little deeper and think about, you know, I have those two opposing kind of streams of thought, but what has historically played out? Like, I know I thought of some examples where, you know, these young and talented teams have kind of come up short, but some where they have. And I was, you know, don't want, I'm just basing that off my memory, and I want to see, you know, what has actually happened. So I went back to the as far back as the 2006-2007 season, so about 10 years, and used KenPom's experience metric, which basically measures, you know, what teams are more experienced in a particular season, based on basically just like class. So a class of all juniors would be more experienced than a team with all juniors would be more experienced in the experience metric than a team with all sophomores. And basically, you know, I think like a freshman, each freshman gets a score of 1, each senior on your team gets a score of 4. So it kind of allocates that way. It gives you a sense of which team is more experienced. So I specifically focused on like the Duke and Kentucky teams, quote unquote, like the young and talented teams. So I focused on going back to 2006, 2007, teams that were top 5 in the preseason poll and were ranked 200th or worse in terms of experience among 351, give or take a few teams. So basically not all the teams that were in my sample were quite as inexperienced as Duke or Kentucky that might have been like even the 350th least experienced team. But again, basically, I just wanted to sample these teams that have a lot of hype, a lot of expectations, top 5 in the preseason poll, are 200th or worst in terms of experience. I wanted to see how these teams performed, both in the season, in terms of what seed they were able to get, but going off from that, how they were able to perform in the NCAA tournament. So I dove into this. Here we go. So for the results, again, this is good where you can have these charts displayed on the article on the website. Again, 1in9quintillion.wordpress.com. But I also can go through some of the results here. So some initial takeaways. There were 31 teams in my sample that made, like, of teams that made it to the NCAA tournament. There were 2 of these top 5 preseason poll teams that, you know, with poor experience that actually did not make it even to the tournament. But again, my focus is seeing like how these teams, once they get to the tournament, how they perform. So that's why I excluded those 2 from the sample, but it's worth noting. But anyway, those 31 teams, 17 of the 31 of these teams, again, the young and the really talented, but not experienced. That's the last time I'll say it, sorry. But 17 of 31 of these teams made it to at least the Elite Eight. That's 55%. And then 29% of these teams made it to at least the Final Four, and 45% did not make it to at least the Elite Eight. And going off of that, 35% of these teams did not even make it to the Sweet 16. So again, that's a lot of information, and there's many takeaways possible. But on the outset, it seems like, okay, like more than half the teams made it to at least the Elite Eight, so that's a pretty good track record, even if, you know, a third of them didn't make it to the Sweet 16 even. Like, that's not great, but, like, that's not really a shot against these teams. Like, these top, again, and we have high expectations for these teams, like, because going into the season, they're, you know, preseason top 5. And so the fact that they're going far in the tournament, you know, why shouldn't we expect that? Maybe we shouldn't discount their chances of going far just because they're young. But again, that's a pretty broad interpretation, so I wanted to dive in even a little bit more specifically. So again, I have, as a reference, the teams that made at least the Final Four, just to see if I could find any patterns between them. And, you know, nothing exactly stood out. So then I decided to break it down even further to see, okay, well, how have the teams performed that both started the season in the top 5 and earned a number 1 seed at the end of the season? So these are teams that not only like started the season as a top 5 team, but also ended the regular season as a top 5 team. Was that a strong predictive factor of postseason success? The fact that they had that consistency and proved they were worthy of that top 5 ranking, and did they have success even though they were inexperienced? And when I looked at that, 9 out of the 11 teams that qualified, 82% of these teams made it to at least the Elite Eight, and 5 of the 11, 45%, made it to at least the Final Four. So again, it's not a huge surprise because these teams, you know, you would think they'd be good, but this seems like a pretty significant factor that, you know, you really do not, I mean, experience or not, if a team starts the season in the top five rankings and ends it with a one seed, you know, they've ridden the whole season, they had high expectations, they've met them, and that's a, you should really have high hopes for them in the postseason. And that's really, again, that's tracked out as nine out of the 11 of these qualifying teams made it to at least the Elite Eight. But what about non-one seed? So let's say you start out in the top five and you go through the season and you don't end up with a one seed. You end up with anything. First, we'll just start up by looking at it as anything but a one seed. When you look at it like this, there's 20 teams that qualified here. And eight out of the 20, 40% made it to at least Elite Eight. 4 out of 20, or 20%, made it to at least the Final Four. And 10 out of 20, or 50%, did not make it to the Sweet 16. So, again, so that doesn't necessarily tell you a ton, but it says, okay, obviously, if you take out the one seeds, you're going to be a little less likely to, you know, get as far in the tournament. But what if we take the two seeds out of the sample? Because, you know, again, if you have a team that starts out as a top five team, then, you know, gets a two seed, you've still been pretty consistent throughout the season. So the fact that you would perform well in the tournament, you know, maybe that shouldn't be a huge surprise, and the experience wouldn't hold you back. But if we take out the two seeds, there's 12 qualifying teams. And so of the non-one, the two seeds. And out of these 12, 33% made it to at least the Elite Eight, 25% made it to at least the Final Four, and half did not even make it to the Sweet 16. So again, that's kind of just what you'd expect. These teams are still showing real potential to get far, even if they're not a one or two seed. But of course, there's still plenty of times where they're not getting that far. So again, that's a lot of information. So I tried to sum it up kind of and have some key takeaways. So in terms of what we take from all this, like, regardless of experience, being a preseason top five team is a very good indicator of postseason success. Again, on the whole, 17 out of 31, or 55% of the teams that were a preseason top five team and earned a one seed. What I'm saying is, regardless of experience, being a preseason top five team is a pretty good indicator of success. Because remember, out of the 31 total sample, that's like not filtering down at all, 55% of them made it to the Elite Eight. So that's a lot. And again, then as I was getting to, but if these teams not only start in the preseason top five, but end with a one seed, experience is really not going to hold them back, because as I talked about earlier, 9 out of the 11 teams that qualified here, or 82% of them that got a one seed, made it to the Elite Eight. So again, that's a really high predictive factor, and they started out strong, ended strong, and 82% of them got to the Elite Eight. But if these teams have not earned a one seed, these young and talented teams, if they've not earned a one seed, they've been more likely to not even make the Sweet 16 than to make at least the Elite Eight. So that's interesting. So again, 8 out of 20 of these teams that are not one seeds made the Elite Eight, but 10 out of 20 did not even make the Sweet 16. So it's a lot of volatility. Again, potential to get really far, but a lot of teams not even making the Sweet 16, which is just, you know, just takes two games, and you'd have to get fairly significantly upset in many cases to not make it to the Sweet 16, depending on the seed, of course. Like I said, still 4 out of 12 of the non-one to two young and talented teams made it to at least the Elite Eight, just demonstrating the potential of these teams. So kind of what it comes down to is there's a lot of volatility. Of the 31 qualifying teams, there were 2 national championships winners, 2 runner-ups, 5 Final Fours, 8 Elite Eights, 3 Sweet 16s, 8 teams that made it to the round of 32, and 3 teams that lost in the first round. So the key thing that stands out there is out of this sample 31, there are only 3 results that ended with a Sweet 16. And I don't want to make too much of that, but what it kind of tells you is that these teams, these young and talented teams, have tended to either fall in the opening weekend or make a run to at least the Elite Eight. And, you know, so it is possible that the lack of Sweet 16s in the sample is insignificant from a predictive standpoint, but it also might be a significant indicator of how these young and talented teams are likely to perform in March. there's an argument to be made that the lack of experience of these teams could hinder a team in the opening weekend while they're still kind of getting the jitters out of the way. But if they make it through that, they get to at least the Sweet 16, win those first two games in the opening weekend. If they get past that, it's, you know, maybe they gain confidence at the same time. And that is why that if they get through that opening weekend, win those first two games, their talent is going to carry them to at least one more win, to at least the Elite Eight. You know, if you get to the Sweet 16, then you're likely to win one more. Obviously, that's like way oversimplifying it. And, you know, even like last season, Kentucky lost in the Sweet 16. So that's one right there. But this data is interesting. I think it just kind of hammers home the point of volatility. So basically, for these young talent teams like Duke and Kentucky, I probably would, you know, they're very capable of losing in the opening weekend. They could get far. You can choose them to get to the Sweet 16 and lose, but I think I would err on the side of kind of taking the volatility approach. Okay, that is it for this article. The last article I wanted to touch on, and I know this is running a little longer than my usual podcasts go, but it's an article I wrote about North Carolina. I basically just wanted to dive into their team, and kind of my initial thought was whether their point guard situation would hold them back. And I guess my thought process initially was, I feel like they have a lot of talented returning players, not to discount the fact they're losing Joel Berry, who obviously was, you know, the leader, the point guard, really good scorer for them, kind of the soul of the team, along with Theo Pinson, who was not only a really great playmaker for them, but they're a great defender and just provided a lot of athleticism. So those are two big losses. But I just felt like, you know, North Carolina, and maybe it's a testament to the depth that they had last season, even though they lost in the round of 32, they were a really strong two seed. So they were very good last year. But they're returning a lot of good guys, really talented guys back. And on top of that, they're bringing in a likely top five pick after a year of school in a Nasir Little, who's a 6'7 forward. So I basically thought that, okay, like North Carolina has a lot of talent, but I felt like they were kind of missing maybe something at the point guard spot, and I was wondering if that would hold them back. So quickly kind of diving into the team, you know, they're returning 67% of their minutes from last season. Like I said, they lost in the round of 32. It was disappointing for them. They should be a top 10 team heading into this season, which I think they deserve to be. Along with Nasir Little, who's going to provide a whole new dynamic for them, the guys they're bringing back include Luke May, who was a third-team All-American last season, who, again, like who's 6'8". He can score from the inside and the outside. He shot 43% from three last season. You know, I feel like he's probably a little underrated on defense, although, you know, he's not a great athlete, which could kind of put a ceiling on his defense a little bit. Also bringing back Kenny Williams, who's another senior along with Luke May. And Williams is 6'4". He's kind of a 3-and-D player for the Tar Heels. Shot 40% from three last season. This might be probably one of the best remaining defenders on the roster. At least he had that reputation. And again, he hasn't, although he's kind of, he's a borderline guard. He's kind of a 2-3 man. Like I said, hasn't shown a ton in terms of being a ball handler or offensive creator. But maybe you can take a little bit of a leap there. Cam Johnson is another senior who's kind of a 3-4 man that shot only 34% from three last season, but I think he's a little bit better of a shooter than that. And statistically, from like a turnover percentage rate and an assist rate, which I got from KenPom, he actually handled the ball probably a little bit better than Williams, but that wasn't really his strength either. So you're not going to count on him to kind of be too much of like, take over point guard duties, for example. And inside, they're bringing back Garrison Brooks and Sterling Manley, who are both going to be sophomores this season. Brooks is 6'9", Manley is 6'11", and they're not the same guy, but they both kind of were thrown in different stretches to see kind of like sink or swim, just like to see, and they both handled themselves pretty well last season. Brooks played more minutes, but when I was diving into the stats, Manley actually ended up looking better from a statistical perspective if you look at like effective field goal percentage, his defensive block rate, his defensive rebounding rate. So it'll be interesting to see if Manley gets more playing time. I think that's warranted. I don't see a situation where Brooks gets way more playing time than Manley just because that's how it was last season, for example. They also got Brandon Robinson, who's kind of been very up and down. He's a junior 6'5 forward, played about 20% of the team's minutes last season, and he shot 39% of three, although on limited attempts, and he kind of is kind of a wild card for them, that especially if he's hitting shots, he provides a little bit of athleticism, and he could be kind of a wild card for this team. And at the point guard spot, they got there's like three options, it seems. Our seventh Woods, who's a junior, and then two freshmen, and Kobe White and Rashawn Black. And like I said, Woods is a junior, and he's probably going to be given the greatest opportunity because he has like a little experience edge, and you know, he's a highly regarded prospect, so he's a good athlete, he's got potential. I don't know a ton about White and Black, Kobe White and Rashawn Black, but I've been hearing good things about them as well. So as much as like they don't have a set in stone point guard option, and I feel like that's going to hold them back a little bit, they do have options to like play with, which is good at least for the team. I'm still just not sure whether any of them will be able to be kind of the distributor they need. Okay, you don't need like a quote unquote point guard, but I feel like the team just needs someone to kind of start their offense and to push the ball and like the fast break, and like when the shot clock's winding down, they need someone to create, just kind of get the offense going. I feel like that's valuable. I touched on how they lost Joel Berry and Theo Pinson last season, that both kind of served that role as like offensive creators in different ways. And so in terms of how the team looks offensively, if UNC is indeed a top 10 team, it's probably going to be driven by their offense more than their defense. Last season, they were, per KenPom, they were sixth in offense and 38th in defense. So UNC, so they're bringing enough guys back. They definitely have enough talent to be a top 5 to 10 offense. But like I was saying, especially against better defenses, I feel like the lack of a playmaker could make the offense look much worse than this when like they can't run their normal sets and they need some people to kind of create against some like a defense like Virginia, for example. I think they could look really, really ugly against that defense. And I know a lot of teams could, but I think it could even be uglier than you might expect due to the kind of the lack of their great ball handling. So like I said, can Woods, Johnson, and Williams, can they step up their playmaking roles a bit? And again, you don't always need a point guard to initiate the offense. Like Luke May, if you throw the ball to him on the elbow, for example, he can initiate some offense as well. And we'll see, you know, what Nazir Little can do. But it's not like you need that all your offense to go through that. But it's just something that, you know, I feel like they're going to have to account for somehow. Defensively, like losing Pinson's not going to help. But when I looked into it, actually, like, UNC's defensive strength last season was their interior defense, as they had the 16th best two-point defensive percentage defense in the country. And, you know, Pinson, obviously, he contributed to defense a lot of ways, but, you know, his primary role at 6'6 is not an interior defender. So you would think that maybe they could carry that over a little bit to this season using, with, like, May, Manley, and Brooks, their quote-unquote interior defenders being back. Actually, UNC's biggest defensive issue, at least from the statistical perspective, seemed to be that they allowed a ton of three-point attempts, and a lot of those three-point attempts also happened to go in. They allowed a poor three-point percentage, too. And analytics will tell you kind of that a team doesn't have that much control over its three-point percentage defense, basically how many of the threes it gives up go in. What they have more control over is how many threes they let teams attempt. So there's an argument that the best three-point percentage defense is actually limiting three-point attempts. And last season, UNC was 287th worst among 351 teams in terms of how many three-point attempts they allowed. And this actually came back to bite them when they lost to Texas A&M the tournament, because Texas A&M shot 24 threes, but also not only shot 24 threes, but made 10 of them. And that contributed to burying the Tar Heels. So can UNC improve upon this? It's tough to say. I look back and to see if maybe it was kind of a Roy Williams scheme, if his teams have just tended to allow a lot of threes. That was kind of the case, but it wasn't clear enough that I would go out and say that for sure. They did tend to kind of allow a lot of threes in that kind of 250 to 300 range in terms of number of threes allowed. But it's also, what I was also considering is that, is it possible that UNC's strong interior defense is partially due to kind of packing the paint a little bit, basically bringing a lot of guys into the paint or, you know, playing off shooters to basically improve their interior defense, but also maybe at the same time allowing more threes to be taken. So I guess the question is, would it be worth compromising two-point defense a bit if this is the case and pressuring three-point shooters a little bit more if it would result in maybe some the offenses getting a little bit of better looks inside the paint and maybe converting twos at a little bit of a higher rate? So that's the question, and I don't know, it'll be worth following, and it's interesting. I really like UNC, but, you know, that I feel like they got to figure out the point guard position a little bit if they're really going to be a national title contender. But I feel like they're very going to be a very strong team this season. Well, that's the podcast. Like I said, check out these articles at 1in9quintillion.wordpress.com, and I'm posting them on Twitter also. The Twitter handle OnePerfectBracket, and I'll be trying to, you know, the season's coming up and it's close and I'm excited, so, you know, I'll continue to check out the show. I'll try to pump out some more episodes. Okay, thanks.